Okay, I'm back. So this is a morning class, so we're just going to jump right into it, but I'm thankful to be back amongst you. And this being a class time, it's going to be somewhat interactive, so I'll have questions and I need answers, right? And if I don't get answers, we might go really long. So we're going to look at Mark 5, so you might just open your Bibles there. And we're talking about begging Jesus, and you say, well, that's an interesting title. Well, that's because this word begging shows up in this text, you know, multiple times. And when you see the same word showing up in a single paragraph, you know that it must be important, right? There's a theme going on. And so I know you've studied the book of Mark, and so you're familiar with this. But I do think it's going to be helpful because it helps us to examine our place in relationship to Jesus and really looking forward and going forward in this new year, now that COVID is largely behind us. And so when we look at it, we have to understand Jesus began his ministry here in Mark 4. He's crossing the Sea of Galilee. And do you remember what happens in Mark 4? A storm. And so Jesus is in the boat with his disciples, and the storm comes up, and what are they doing? They're bailing out water because the waves are coming over and they're going to sink. Where's Jesus in the boat, by the way? Sleeping. Now, why is he sleeping in the stern of the boat? There's two reasons. He's tired. I mean, that's why you sleep, right? You're tired. Jesus is a human and God in the flesh, but he gets tired. What's the second reason he's sleeping and not bailing? He's what?
He was not fearing it.
And why was he not fearing it? That's exactly right. Why is he not fearing it?
They weren't going to sink.
That's right, because he is the creator of the heavens and the earth. And they obey him. Now, his disciples have seen miracles yet already, haven't they? But they don't understand fully who he is. So when it becomes overwhelming, they wake him up, and this is probably the, you know, I say, how dare you guys say this to him? But if I was there, I probably would have said the same thing. He said, Master, do you not care? We're perishing. We're dying here. What are you doing sleeping? Is that a mild rebuke?
Yeah.
Like, wake up and help us. Yeah. And what does Jesus say? Just with one word. When I say one word, just peace. Be still. Flat sea and the wind's gone. And then he looks to him, and what does he say? O ye of little faith. So they have faith, don't they? But it needs to grow, and I think that's indicative of all of us. We believe who Jesus is, but is there room for growth in our faith? And it says the disciples there, I'm still in Mark 4 setting this all up, now they become scared, not of the storm, which it said previously. Who are they scared of now? Jesus. Is it appropriate to be fearful of Jesus? They said, who is this man? That's the question they're asking. Who is this man that the winds and the waves obey him? And I think that's the question before us. And that's the question that Mark's presenting. Who is this man named Jesus? And we go, oh yeah, he's the Christ. He's the Son of God. And that's why we're here this morning at this hour while other people are doing their things out in God's creation. We're here to talk about him. But do you really understand who he is, that with just the spoken word, everything's okay? And if we really believe that, would we be fearful in our life when things come upon us? Probably not. And so there's the backstory. And really, we live in a world that really don't know who Jesus is, do they? And it's up to us to make that message known. So we get to Mark chapter 5 and verse 1. He came to the other side of the sea in the country of the Gerasenes. And we're going to read this account where there's this Gerasene demonic and a man possessed by multiple demons. And Jesus is, of course, going to cast out those demons. So we're going to read the whole text, and I want you to listen to for two things. First, there are six characters in this narrative. Four of them are the main ones, and two are just like secondary roles, all right? And then, so pick those out as we read them, and I'll ask who they are after we're done. And then notice for the use of the word begging in this text, and how many times you see it. And your Bible might say beseech or implore, but my Bible would say beg, all right? So let's read together in Mark chapter 5, verse 1. They came to the other side of the sea in the country of the Gerasenes. And when he came out of the boat, immediately a man from the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. And he had his dwelling among the tombs, and no one was able to bind him anymore, even with a chain, because he often had been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been torn apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces, and no one was strong enough to subdue him. And constantly, night and day, among the tombs and in the mountains, he was crying out and gashing himself with stones. And seeing Jesus from a distance, he ran up and bowed down before him. And crying out with a loud voice, he said, "What do I have to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God, do not torment me." For he had been saying this to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And he was asking him, "What is your name?" And he said to him, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he began to entreat, and that's the word beg in some of your Bibles, entreat him earnestly not to send him out of the country. Now there was a big herd of swine feeding there on the mountains, and the demons entreated him, saying, "Send us into the swine so that we may enter them." And so he, that's Jesus, gave them permission, and coming out, the unclean spirits entered the swine, and the herd rushed down the steep bank and into the sea, about 2,000 of them, and they were drowned in the sea. And their herdsmen, they ran away and reported in the city and in the country. And the people came to see what had happened. And they came to Jesus and observed the man who had been demon-possessed sitting down, clothed, and in his right mind. The very man who had the legion, and they become frightened. And those who had seen it described to them how it had happened to the demon-possessed man and all about the swine. And they began to entreat him. Entreat who? Jesus, to depart from the region. And as he was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed was entreating him that he might accompany him. And Jesus didn't let him. But he said to him, "Go to your people and report to them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim in Decapolis with what great things Jesus has done for him. And everyone marveled. They were truly, truly amazed. All right. So who are the six characters in this narrative that we need to concentrate? The first one would be who? Jesus, obviously. Everything's about Jesus. And if we miss that, we miss really the essence of the gospel and reading any account. If it's in the Old Testament, it's about Jesus. He's coming. If it's the New Testament, Jesus has come. If it's the letters, after that, it's Jesus is coming back. Everything's really about Jesus. Who's the second character, main character? The demon-possessed individual, all right? And he has a legion of demons in him. So what would be the second or the third character? The demons itself, all right? Now, the fourth one might be a little more obscure. Who would that be? Why the herdsmen?
They're watching the flock.
Okay, and they play a role in here because what are they going to do as well?
Report to the city.
Yeah. Okay, then what's the fifth one? Character.
The swine.
Oh, yeah. That's good. I'm going to put them at number six, but they play a role. It's kind of, but there's one in between the pigs and the townspeople. All right. The townspeople. Now, how many times do you see the word beg or implore, entreat? Who did the begging? Who was the first one to do so? The legions, the demons. Now, it was the man, but it was legions talking through the man, right? Who is the second people or whatever to do begging? No. Who? What? Nancy? Oh. Oh, so the townspeople. They do the. And who is the third character to do the begging? The man. There's a lot of begging going on in this text. And we're going to finish chapter 5, Lord willing, tonight. And there's Jairus, you know, the synagogue official, and he's going to do some begging too. A lot of people, when they come to Jesus, they beg of him. And that's important for us to know. And that's why this is in this text multiple times. So we're going to look at the three individuals here, the three accounts of begging. But this is to earnestly implore and to ask something of them. It's to petition them. And it's because you're desperate. When you're desperate, what do? You beg for help. And that shows humility, doesn't it? That you're in the presence of someone that's somehow superior to you because they can answer your needs. They can provide for your request. And so that's all involved in this word begging, okay? And so the first one is, of course, the demon-possessed man, but the demons are actually going to do the begging. But this individual, he is just a man in crisis, isn't he? What do we know about him from the text? He lived among the tombs, right? That made him unclean, according to the law. How did he live among the tombs in this Decapolis area? It's up here, over here is it's on this side of the Sea of Galilee, and it's called the Decapolis because Rome had established 10 cities, and they were Roman cities, and so they weren't all populated by Jews. There'd be Gentiles living there as well. But he's over in this area, and you can name them, but this man, he was a man living in crisis, like I say. How did he live? Naked. Because couldn't keep clothes on him. Was he superhuman strength? Like a superhero? Well, I wouldn't call him a superhero, but when they shackled him, what would he do? He could break them. What's he doing as far as vocally up there in the mountains among the tombs?
Screaming.
Huh?
He's screaming.
He's screaming. And that's word is like someone, a dog, you know, yipping or yelling. And it's just this loud sound always coming out of him. And he's also cutting himself. You know, that's a real emotional issue when people are so distraught. And it happens today that they cut themselves. And our heart goes out to that person that is battling such emotions or depression as they do that. But it's because of the demons, right? This is a man living in crisis. He's unclean. No one could subdue him. That means to tame him like you tame a horse, because horses are hugely strong, aren't they? But if you can tame their spirit or break their will so they can submit their spirit to you, you can ride them. That's the word that's used here. No one could subdue him. No one could tame him. He's like a wild animal. What a miserable life he has. And you think you have it bad. We think we have it bad sometimes.
He didn't put himself there.
I'm sorry?
He didn't put himself
no
there.
Fault of his own, exactly.
Because the townspeople shackled him and put him up there to get him out of there.
That's right. He's an outcast. Can't associate. Talk about isolated. Can't be in the synagogue. Can't worship. Unclean. And what prospects does he have for a blessed life? But it's the demons that come, first of all, that beg to him. And we see that. It runs up the man, but it's the demons doing it. They bows down. What does that show? The demons. I'm sorry?
Respect.
Submission. Humility. Here this all-powerful demons, there's legion, so I have to use it in the plural, they understand when they're in the presence of true authority. You see that? They bow down. Now, I wouldn't call it worship, but this is the same word that is used for worship. When you bow down and fall before someone's feet, it shows humility in the presence of a superior. That's what the word means there when it says he bowed down. And he confesses who Jesus is. Why would I say that? Well, what does it say? You're right, in the text. What do I have to do with you? Oh, what? What is he calling? Jesus, the Son of God. He's confessing who Jesus is. Where people in the world don't get it, this demon understand who he's in the presence of. He's confessing him. And he knows he's in the power of someone more important than himself. And he goes, it's interesting, there's this language that he uses, and it's lost on us in because it's only in the Greek, when he says, what do I have to do with you, or what do you have to do with me? It really literally means this, the language, when I look at it in the Greek, it's a Greek idiom, and what to me and to you? Well, that makes no sense to us. What to me and to you? But if someone brought you some of their problems and had nothing to do with you in your life, you might ask, what do I have to do with that? That's your business, not mine. Leave me alone. And that's exactly what he's saying here. What me to you? What are you doing here? This is my place. I'm kind of ruling here. Leave me alone. Get out of here. That's what he's asking. But it doesn't stop there. He adjures Jesus, implores him. That's like putting him under an oath to just leave us alone. Now, isn't that interesting? Because the next thing he does is he's going to beg. After Jesus asks his name, says, what is your name? And he says, Legion. Now, what does that represent to us, knowing some Roman culture? What does legion mean?
Lots of.
I'm sorry?
Lots of,
all right? In the military, what would you have? A legion of soldiers? So it'd be several thousand. We don't know how many, but how many pigs ended up dying? Are there at least 2,000 demons in this person? Yes. And you say, well, I don't understand that. I know it's beyond our comprehension because we didn't live in that time and era where God allowed this to happen. But he's imploring, and adjuring, says, leave us alone. And then they finally say, just don't cast us out of the country. There's some pigs there. And then we come to our word. They're begging Jesus, send us into the pigs. This is where you come up with deviled ham. All right, that's my only joke for the day. It started right here. No. All right. You got that finally, huh? No, but they think that we don't have to be thrown in the abyss if we can somehow inhabit these pigs. But you know what he's doing? These demons, literally, they're praying to Jesus. They're begging Jesus. They're petitioning Jesus. And that's like most bullies, the people that think they can oppress others. When they're in the presence of true power and authority, they become weak, intimidated, and they beg for mercy. They're begging Jesus, praying to Jesus, because they know they're in the power of someone that is superior, that the God of the heavens and the earth. And what's amazing, Jesus gives them permission. He said, okay. Now, they think they've got it made, not knowing that when they enter the pigs, they're going to, for some reason, run over a cliff and perish when they fall into the sea. Quite an account, isn't it? Now, this is all done for an impression upon the people that are witnessing this. So, let's look now at the herdsmen, because they are going to do some begging as well. So we find in verse 14, they ran away. And they reported to the city and the countryside. Then the people come to see what had happened. And so in verse 15, as we read, they came to Jesus and saw the man who had been demon-possessed. Look at what it says in the text there. Sitting down, right? Clothed, because he was naked, and in his right mind. He's not just screaming and cutting himself. This man is resting, because he's sitting. He's respectful because he's clothed. And he's rational for the first time in their known life because he's in his right mind. He's got control of his passions and his desires because the demons have been removed. Who did this for him, by the way? Jesus. I don't know what's troubling you. And I know that we all have our demons in our life. And sometimes we try to work it out on ourselves. If I was just strong enough, and if I just believed enough, or if I just worked hard enough, it would all be okay. But sometimes the only one that can deliver us is Jesus. It's when we just beg of him for deliverance. And he can deliver us from whatever ails us. Paul had to learn that lesson. Remember, he had that thorn in the flesh? We don't know what it was. Some say it was his physical countenance. Some say it might have been sexual urges. We don't know. But Paul says, I prayed three times for just to be taken away. And what was the answer? No. I'm going to allow you to have this thorn so you'll be humbled and you'll depend upon me. Because in your weakness, I can be strong. Because when you're trying to work it out yourself, there's no room for me, Jesus, to operate. But when you're weak and humble and you cry to me, then you can be powerful because it's my power working through you. And that's why Paul said, when I'm weak, I'm therefore strong. Power is perfected in weakness. God's power is perfected in my weakness. So if you feel like you're weak, good for you. You got a direct connection to power if you just beg of Jesus. So go back to the text. It says they become frightened. They became frightened. And because they're frightened, it says they now beg him. And that's the same word that the demons use. It's to beseech it. And it's just to be desperate. Like, leave. Just get out of here. Why do you think they're begging him to leave? Why are they frightened? Any ideas? Okay, two things you mentioned. Let's do the last one first. Was this a financial loss to the community? Yeah. And you say, well, why are the Jews having pigs anyway? We don't know if they're all Jews. We don't know what they are. They could have been Jews that were defying the law and having pigs. They could have been Gentiles. But is there a huge financial loss? And that's going to be community-wide. That'd be a reason. All right? We don't want you around. And the first thing you said is they recognize their, what did you say?
The power.
Yeah. They're in the presence of someone who is very, 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 very powerful. And they don't know what to do with that. Now remember back in the boat, what was the question the disciples asked after they seen Jesus calm the sea with the spoken word? What was their question? Who is this man? Do you think these townspeople are wrestling with that same question? Who is this man? Now, I'm convinced that everyone in the world, without exception, knows there's a God. And I say that because Paul says it first. Because God has clearly made himself known by that which has been made. That's Romans chapter 1, down there, verse 21. It says, so they're without excuse. Everyone knows, just by looking at creation, the design of it, there has to be an almighty, powerful creator. So Jesus comes to the earth, and he says, I am that creator. Because in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And all things that came to being by this word, Jesus, by the spoken word, and it happened. People didn't know what to do with that. Now, why don't they know what to do with it? But it produces fear because the disciples were afraid of Jesus now, not of the storm, but of Jesus. And these individuals are afraid too because what are we going to do with it? Are you here to bless, to dominate? To put us in some slavery? Another reason, like, sometimes people don't want to deal with Jesus, and they want him just to go away because he interferes with their own agendas. And that pretty much is the society we live in America. It's all about me, what I want, what I can get. Want to be the Lord of my own life, and don't let anybody else tell me what's right or wrong or what I have to do or can't do. And so when an all-powerful creator is just a suggestion that he could be the Lord of my life, I don't want to deal with that because I have to give up dominion over myself to someone else, and I don't want to. And that most Americans, they want to be in charge of their own life. That's my biggest battle, is submitting to Jesus in everything. And so rather than deal with the source of power and potential blessings, he's a deliverer. They don't get that. They want to get rid of him. And we have so many people today just begging Jesus to go away. And they try to silence him and silence those that want to talk about him because they don't want to deal with him. You know, sadly, if you tell Jesus to go away long enough, he'll do just that. What does he do to their request? He honors it. To me, that's amazing. They say, leave, please. They're begging him, go. And he goes, okay. Now, how many times have we tried to share Jesus with someone and people, no, 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 I don't want, we want it for them worse than they want it for themselves. There comes a time where you just have to, okay. You want anything to do with him? That's fine. I'm leaving. And it's on them. It's sad. But Jesus goes down and gets in the boat. So we're not done. Because here we have the final person that comes and begs. Unlike these people, there's no gratitude. There's no joy of what just happened. You know, they don't value the redemption of a single soul, do they? I mean, this man has been saved from his misery, and all they can do is think of himself. And sadly, that's the way it is the world today. Sometimes with us, we're not even concerned with a single soul's salvation because we are gripped with fear. There's a lack of joy and gratitude. And so sometimes we can find ourselves saying to Jesus, don't torture us, just leave. But not with the man that has been delivered. Now, we don't know his name. We don't know really anything much about him except for what is revealed to us right here. So Jesus is getting in the boat. He's going to cross over the sea. And if we find the man who had been, past tense, he's delivered now. He comes up to Jesus and was begging him. Same word. Does your Bible have a different word than begging? Just to catch up with you. Entreating.
Implore.
All right. You've used that word lately, last month. Yeah, we don't use implore, but it's a great word. We use maybe word beg, but not even entreat. So that's why I'll stick with the word begging, because it has a connotation. Like little kid, please, 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 can I get a new bike? Can I get a new bike? And they just keep begging, and finally, what do? Okay. That's what's going on here. And you say, well, God doesn't want us to beg. Yes, he does. Twice Jesus honors the people that are begging him. First the legion of demons, and then the townspeople. Here's the third occasion. And he's begging, and what is he begging for? I just want to go with you. I just want to follow you. Now, why would he beg to follow Jesus? It should be obvious, but you have to give me the answer. Why? Why does he want to go with Jesus? Changed his life. What? Gave him back his life. That's right. Safe. Oh, that's a good word. Safe. You're safe with Jesus. They learned that in the boat. They should have. Is there gratitude here? Gratefulness? Excitement? I mean, who else do you want to be with? Because he knows personally how hell can feel like on this earth, and he's just been delivered from it. Why wouldn't you want to go with the one that saved you from that? But it's the first request that Jesus denies. Yes to the demons. Yes to the townspeople. And they say, just get out of here. But no to the one who was delivered. Now that's significant. And we have to understand why. It's because Jesus has something better for him to do. Doesn't he? Because what does he ask him to do? Or actually tell him to do? What?
Proclaim.
All right. You go where?
Proclaim.
Okay. First, and the first, exactly. The first word is go home. Where do you start with? Your own people that are familiar with you. You go home to your people and report to them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you. And we find that he went to the whole area in the country. Why would you go home first and tell them about the great things the Lord has done for you? Yeah, they knew your former life, and now they see you in resting, respectful, rational. What happened to you? And the only answer you can give is what? Jesus. And it gives you the opportunity to tell about the great things. Isn't that what he says? The Lord has done for you. Now, and when it comes to converting those around us, it's not about having the best argument. It's not having about the best logic. Sometimes it's just simply having the best story. Because what is Jesus asking him to do? Prove from the prophets that Jesus is the Messiah? What's he asking him to do? You just tell them how God has done such great things. Now, your life might not have been as bad as this demon-possessed man. And some of you might argue, yeah, it's just as bad in a different way. But you might not have as dramatic story, but anyone that's come to Christ, when we understand where we are going and what God has done for us and where we are going, now the status we have as his children, we have a great story to tell. All of us. And if we're grateful and excited and begging to follow Jesus when he sends us on a mission, this is what it is, a mission, we'll be grateful to do it. And he went to the whole area. Isn't that what it says in the text as we finish that? In Mark 5, where are we? In verse 20, he went away, began to proclaim to Decapolis what great things had Jesus done for him. And what did the people do? They marveled. The word tell is like a town crier. It's like you're going through the city and the village and you're crying out just the news of the day or whatever. That's the word that Jesus used for here. You just proclaim. You tell. And some are going to listen. Most won't. But you still tell it. So let's just wrap this all up. Because now he goes away and the whole area as Rod pointed out, in Decapolis. He didn't just go to his home, but he went to all these different cities. And everybody's just amazed. That's how the early church grew. So Jesus is first confronted with the elements, and he overcomes the storm just to get to this area. Then he has to deal with demons and defeat them. And the rest of the chapter, he's going to be confronted with illness, and even death. And we already know what's going to happen. He's going to be champion over those as well. But we'll look at that, Lord willing, tonight. Because in all these things, I don't care if it's demons or disease or death, Jesus always proves himself to be master over all. And that's the grace that we have available to us. Master over anything that besieges us. So the last person I want to introduce into this narrative, because remember there were six, remember? The pigs, yeah, they played a part. But it was Jesus, the demon-possessed man, the demons, and the townspeople. But the last person we have to introduce into this text, the seventh person, is you. Now, why would I say that? Because all of us are going to identify more closely with one of those characters or the other. Hopefully it's not with the demons that we just go around tormenting people in their lives, but we've probably met people like that. And hopefully that's not it. And sadly, for some even Christians, they more relate to the townspeople, just go away. And you know, my religion is kind of personal. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want anyone to know about it. Just go away. Hopefully we identify mostly with the man who's been delivered. We have great things to tell. We could care less what people think of us because we knew what our life once was, and we want to follow the master because of the great joy and things he can do for us. And so the question still echoes that we started with in the boat. And what was that question again? Who is this man? People have been wrestling with that question, the answer to it, for centuries. And could I not say it's true that we still wrestle with it ourselves as individuals? It's easy to say, yeah, he's the Son of God. He's in charge of everything. He sits on the throne of grace, ready to run to those who are needy in the time of need. That's Hebrews 4. We know that he washes all, we say all the things, but do we really trust that? Have we really encountered him where he calms the storm in my life where I can say, who is this man? Because if we were truly convinced, we'd beg to follow Jesus. We would beg to be put in service by him. We would go out as much as we could possibly and tell the great things that he's done. So that question still is alive. And so the question we have to ask is, who do I identify with and what can Jesus do for me? All right, any thoughts or comments as we wrap this up? Yes.
And in Mark chapter 7 and 31, you can see what happened because they're welcomed into the city of Decapolis for preaching and teaching and healing.
I'm glad you said that because he sets up, is that what you're saying? His teaching is like a precursor so to receive later. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just what one person can do. It's amazing. It's amazing what one person can do. And so really the future of your life as a Christian and as a congregation really centers on this issue. Who is this man? Who are we going to trust? Are we going to rejoice at our weaknesses so we can really truly be strong? And is he able to deliver us? Are we going to be bold and powerful? And when people beg us to go away, what are we going to do? Because those things can be deflating, can't they? Yeah. Anything else? All right, we're going to talk about the assembly in our assembly. And because if we understood who Jesus would, wouldn't we just beg to us to be with him? And that's what happens in our assembly. And we'll talk about that. Then Lord willing, tonight we'll come back and look at Jairus. And then there was, Jesus goes with him to heal his daughter. And do you remember what happened on the way? Yeah, just a touch. He touches his coat, the hem of his garment. And then when he gets to Jairus' daughter, what's already happened? She died. And Jesus said, nah, she's asleep, and people laughed at him. Have you ever laughed at you? Get in line. It's okay. They laughed at Jesus. All right, thank you very much.